What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is the art of being well. What's up and welcome to the art of being well. I am a leading functional medicine doctor. I get to consult people around the world via telehealth, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote Intuitive Fasting, The Inflammation Spectrum, Ketotarian, and the newest book, Gut Feelings. If you want to learn more about my clinical work, the telehealth center, we actually have brand new telehealth patient options now open and lots of free resources there for you as well. You could check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners of The Art of Being Well, we're giving away free signed books. What the heck? All you have to do for a chance to win is head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well there. Tell us what you love about the show. You can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review itself, or you could take a screenshot of the Apple Podcast review and message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole. And every single month, no matter when you listen to this episode, my team and I will be randomly picking winners from the Instagram messages as well as the Apple Podcast reviews themselves from both places. And then I'll reach out to you. I'll ask which book you want me to sign and we'll send it out to you. All right, good luck. Let's get to today's guest. This is a first for me. Drumroll. I'm having someone from my family on the pod, everybody. Not only because of nepotism, that's not the reason why. He is a leader in regenerative farming. You're going to learn so much from him. And he just so happens to be one of my best friends, my brother-in-law. The in-law part does not do it justice. He's been a part of my life for about 20 years now. And he's definitely a brother to me. So his name, for those of you that don't know him, is Adam Mason. He is a regenerative farmer at Heal Farms. Heal Farms grows pasture-raised, organic-fed meat. They focus on production of the highest standards without compromising the ecosystem they operate in. Adam has been farming for over 12 years and counting, from vegetable production, pasture management, and animal production. Heal Farms is non-compromising, and their mission is to provide their community the purest meat that is free from antibiotics, hormones, synthetics, and GMOs. They know the struggle of consumers trying to find grocery store meat that is healing to their bodies. This is why they are driven to provide their customers with food that is nutrient-dense, regenerative, and healing not only to the earth, but to those that eat it. Let's get right to it. This is Adam Mason's Art of Being Well. I can't believe this day is here.
It's been a long time.
We've
been talking about it.
I can't believe it. This is kind of a big day for me. I have someone that I looked up to and my family on the podcast. How does it feel for you? Because I know it's amazing for me.
It's awesome. I just want you to announce me. Like you do all the big shots. Like you say Gwyneth freaking Paltrow, you gotta say Adam freaking Mason.
Adam freaking Mason, yes! Is on the podcast.
Yes. Life is complete.
You've made it.
I made it.
You made it. So my friend, my brother,
Yes.
The little quick background for people, I have known you since I was probably 20 years old.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So 20 years almost. I'm dating myself. We're not dating each other.
No, I mean, we're family. So
yeah, that's right. So tell me, like, just real fast, did you ever feel like our lives would end up like this?
No. No, absolutely not. I mean,
like, the fact that you're even living in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Especially like where I was as a person when we met.
Yeah.
No way. Like, I mean, I thought I would die there, but
yeah.
Yeah. So much has changed.
Yeah. So, Adam, for backstory, Adam moved from LA. That's where we were living. My wife's whole family's from, like, generation Los Angelinos.
Yeah.
Now they're all living with me in Western Pennsylvania in the middle of nowhere.
It's all because of you.
I slowly brought the Los Angelinos to Western Pennsylvania. And you bought a 100-acre farm.
Yeah.
And you are living the antithetical life of Los Angeles right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I tell people all the time, like, I mean, I did graffiti as a kid. Like, there was drive-bys and bomb squad. And now I'm, you know, living what almost seems to be like impossible for a Californian to, you know, what I'm doing on my scale.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I thank God every single day. It's just, I'm living the dream. So
yeah, it is. I know you and know your passion, and you are living the dream. And so let's talk about how you got into this. Cause you, mm-hmm. I know you, there are many farmers out there that are probably self-trained. But you are not only self-trained, but you're actually academically trained in this. So can you talk a little bit about what got you into regenerative farming first, and then we'll define regenerative farming in a moment.
Yeah, I think what originally like sparked the bug in me, which I didn't know I had, I mean, I wanted to be like a rock star, which is a really stupid, I mean, whatever, I was stupid and young. Mm-hmm. But I took a plant ID class, and that just like, I didn't realize I was a plant nerd. And then that led me to a job where I ended up in Arizona in working in like throughout all of Arizona. And I ended up in Native American land and I was doing power line patrolling. But what was unique is that seeing the level of poverty in the United States of America, you know, I mean, these people living in like tin shacks, like third world country. Mm-hmm. And I had this vision that I was to grow food for people who couldn't grow for themselves. And the irony with all of that was I didn't know how to grow food. Mm-hmm. And so that led me down a path to eventually going to Cal Poly Pomona and getting my bachelor's in plant science. Ultimately, you know, I did that for, I don't know, what, eight or 10 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ultimately led me here. But yeah, I did get, you know, academically trained there. I learned so much from, I mean, I grew, if you name a crop, I grew it. Mm-hmm. Always honed towards and gravitated towards the animal pasture management side of things. Like I worked with a lot of cool projects. We were the first ones to ever implement sheep grazing in vineyards at Cal Poly. Before it was like, no, like, you know, animals and plants are two separate things. It's like, no, like they aren't. I mean, you look at nature, like mm-hmm. they all work together. So yeah, some really cool things. And yeah, always what I ultimately wanted to do was, you know, get that education. And then after having that, it was like, okay, how do I get this, mm-hmm. this vision that I have? How do I accomplish that? So we visited friends in Haiti and we went to a very poor orphanage and the orphanage was funded by this Haitian man. I went into the boys and girls room and I was overwhelmed by the stench of urine. And I'm like, Jimmy, why does it smell like this? And he goes, well, we can't afford diapers. And so the kids, they wet their beds and we try to hose it out every day, but it's so humid that it never dries. Mm-hmm. So these foam pads were literally getting corroded by the urine and the stench was just unbearable. I said, this is unacceptable. So when I got back to the States, I fundraised over $8,000. I brought back with me by myself 300 pounds of sheets, mattresses, or money for mattresses. I went over there, built beds. I had cloth diapers, clothes, toys, all that stuff, brought it over, which ultimately led me to starting a nonprofit called HEAL, H-E-A-L. And what it was is that we could build agricultural systems for people to give them self-sustaining aid. So, you know, instead of just handing money to the orphanage, I built systems that we did a goat project. We did a medium-scaled aquaponic system. So they were able to have fish, fresh vegetables, and then any excess they could sell for the orphanage for schooling and stuff. Ultimately led me to Pennsylvania. And so when it was time to start our farm, I hated the aspect of always feeling like I had to beg for money. I felt like I was a professional beggar doing the nonprofit thing. So we wanted a way to support the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so we called it HEAL for HEAL Farms. And it was a way to, a percentage of all of our sales goes to HEAL the nonprofit.
I love that.
Yeah.
So
a long story.
No, it's an amazing story. Quick, I know you gave us the high level points. And I know for a moment, I know this has nothing to do with regenerative farming, but I just want to geek out on the fact that you also worked on like a Disney farm at one point, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the shows that people see on TV, I think you could say that it was a stepping stone in many ways.
Yes.
And you learned a lot. It's not what you wanted to do for long term, but you still honored that season of your life doing farming for the film industry, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so it was for Disney bought the ranch in 1950. Like Old Yeller was shot there, Little House on the Prairie, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Office, like Dwight Schrute's Beet Farm was there. That was the coolest thing for me, being a huge Office fan. But yeah, it was definitely not what I wanted to do. Like I was put on this earth to grow food for people, and it was not growing food. I mean, it was this, you know, Disney, it's the magic, right? The facade of everything. But it did land me here, which although it was not a good time in my life, it just wasn't rewarding. There was no, I feel like I have to do something that I feel is noble. And then that was not a noble job, noble position.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I think you, like you said, if it wasn't for that, you wouldn't have ended up.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Cause that having that on my resume ended me up in Pennsylvania. So,
yeah, exactly. So then you got on your own. You have this beautiful farm in Western Pennsylvania. Let's define, we've talked about it briefly in past episodes, but I want to touch on this briefly just to define this term that people may be hear, regenerative farming.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's good. They maybe know a little bit about it, but what sets regenerative farming apart and how is it different than just organic?
Yeah. So regenerative, it is so multifaceted, and there's multiple ways to skin that cat. It is looking at soil health, community, ecosystems, animal health, plant health, all these factors, weather, it all plays into this, and you are sitting there juggling each one of these, trying to make this balanced, wonderful ecosystem. And it's a way that you aren't forcing nature to bend to your knees, to its knees. It's a way to work with amongst nature to where you can create production, grow incredibly healthy food that is healthy for the plants, healthy for the soil, healthy when we consume it, and overall healthy for the ecosystem and the wildlife around you. Cause you know, it's we're all living amongst that. And it is a difficult thing to define because industry is constantly, they see that money getting pushed towards it. I mean, people are striving for health in their bodies, health in their food. And so big ag is trying to take those customers and deceiving them. And so it's constantly a battle as a small farmer, you know, doing what is right, having the integrity and standards that we do to constantly try to redefine what we're doing because the industry takes that and gets it twisted where they can label their product with the words that we're using.
Right. So this is done in other spaces within our world, right? It's done in the beauty world, the clean beauty world. They call it greenwashing, right?
Yes.
It's done in health food with labeling of things. It's done in farming, obviously, greenwashing. And with marketing terms and make it sound natural. Someone told me, I'm not going to blast the actual company out, but they used to call it, the original name was Chemlon. Chemlon was the original. This is a company that made people's yards like really green and lush and like a monoculture of grass. And we were talking about it in the morning meeting for patients and they changed their name using the word green. It was something about like green or eco. They made it seem oh, wow, this is like just green. It's natural.
Right.
But it's, I said the original name was the actual more descriptive
right.
chemicals on
lime. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know that's a small example, but it's done in every world because the, like you said, the consumer is becoming savvier.
Right.
People are more empowered and educated. They are concerned about their health. So big corporations are being mindful of that. And look, many times big corporations can actually be changed because
it's true.
Of grassroots and people, the consumer speaking with their dollar.
Right. Yeah. So one of the things I always am concerned about is that when you look at the big corporations, their number one driving force is profit. So they are, profit drives all their decisions. So even though they may be changing some things, they're still bottom line and they won't make the full change. It's, you know, there's many times that we get customers and they're constantly, they see the industry lies. You know, there's words that were taken, like for instance, free range organic. Everyone thinks when you say that, you paint the picture of like, oh, these chickens are out on grass, they're free ranging and they're organic. So there's no synthetics, no any of that. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter, that's not true. Mm-hmm. So when you look at free range, let's talk on the conventional side, free range eggs, for instance, or free range chicken, you know, meat. What it really is a giant warehouse with 100,000 other birds. These chickens are walking around their own feces. The air is so toxic that the workers have to wear full hazmat suits to go in there. I mean, the dander, the ammonia, all that stress, all those toxins are going straight to their meat. They're getting fed antibiotics to basically keep them, prop them up and keep them alive.
Right, because they are, otherwise they would get diseases.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then you look at what that produces. So that situation, what's the one thing you think when you think of manure? What immediately lands on there? Flies, right? So you have this outbreak of fly larva outbreak. And so what is it? You know, that's pestering the chickens, giving them more stress. So what do? They literally give them pesticide in their feed so that when they poop out the manure, it's toxic to the flies. So not toxic enough to kill them, but toxic enough to kill the fly larva. And it's like, that's what we're consuming. And none of this is all hidden in the grocery stores. You don't see that. And then you see antibiotic and hormone free. Well, hormones have been outlawed in chickens. And so you can't find that. But certain antibiotics produce a growth at a small dose will produce actually a growth type situation for the chicken. Mm-hmm. So it is not technically a hormone.
Yeah. But it acts as
growing, you know. So yeah. So there, you know, and then the USDA will take an antibiotic and say, oh, that's technically not an antibiotic, and pass that through. So there's a lot of revolving door with the industry, and many of my customers, they don't trust what they see in the grocery store, and I don't blame them. I don't trust it either, you know?
Lately, I've been trying out new mocktail recipes when friends come over. I'm always looking for something that won't leave anyone out, even if they're cutting back on alcohol, or like myself, I don't drink alcohol. If you're looking to unwind with a refreshing drink after a busy day or when people are coming over your house and you don't like hangovers or bloating or feeling like crap the next morning, a drink that I love is hop water. Hop water is a non-alcoholic sparkling hop water with adaptogens and nootropics for added mood boosting, brain boosting benefits. It's a drink that loves you back, but still helps you unwind, calm down. It tastes amazing. Hop water, that's H-O-P-W-T-R, hop water. It's made from an exclusive blend of hops that gives it this crisp, citrusy, piney flavor that tastes so good. The best part, hop water is purposefully crafted without any calories, without any carbs or sugar or other nasty ingredients, but so refreshing and full of hoppy flavor. What I also love about hop water is you can have them straight up like I do, but they also have these amazing mocktail recipes that I've been experimenting with. They have it on their website. Hop water is the perfect brew to help you unwind anytime. I know you'll love it too. And I've arranged for a special limited time offer just for my listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase, plus get free shipping when you order 24 cans or more. To get this offer, you have to go to my special URL. That's hopwater.com/Will Cole. That's hopwtr.com/Will Cole. Don't wait, order today. Go to hop hopwtr.com/Will Cole. hopwtr.com/Will Cole. Our next partner is something that I have every day. I recommend it to telehealth patients. It's called AG1. It's the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. I drink it every day. It's super convenient in between consulting patients. And I have taken it 4 years. It's so freaking good. Through a science-driven formulation of vitamins, probiotics, and whole food source nutrients, AG1 delivers comprehensive support for your brain, your gut, and your immune system. Since 2010, they've improved their formula 52 times in the pursuit of making the best foundational nutrition supplement imaginable through high-quality ingredients and rigorous standards. With just one scoop of AG1, you can get the nutrients and gut health support that helps your whole body thrive and cover your nutritional bases. Look, you all know I look at labs for a living. I see nutrient deficiencies every day on new patients. What I love about AG1, it's one simple thing, one ritual you can do every day to cover the most common nutrient deficiencies. And that's what the whole point is foundational nutrition support. Think of AG1 like a multivitamin, multimineral, a green superfood, a probiotic blend, an adaptogen blend, and a functional mushroom blend all in one. I love that AG1 is delivered monthly, so I don't have to think about it. I also love their travel packs. I just came back from traveling abroad. If I'm gone for like 7 days, I'm packing 7 AG1 travel packs so I can have one every day on the go. So I don't have to miss a day. It tastes great. You just mix it up with water. It's really easy. If you want to put it into a smoothie, you can do that too. But you can feel good knowing you've taken great care of your health every day. So if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of their liquid vitamin D3 K2. You get a whole year supply of that, as well as 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. So you have to go to drinkag1.com/Will Cole. That's DRINKAG and then the number 1.com/Will Cole. Drinkag1.com/Will Cole. Check it out. So I'm glad you got into this because I wanted to get into the weeds with these labels so people can know when they're at the supermarket or at the farmer's market or wherever, if they're shopping online, what are terms to look out for. So free range, that's kind of what that means. It's not really descriptive. So what differentiates free range versus something that's labeled nothing? It's just your standard old chicken or eggs. What would be the difference there?
Yeah, there's really no difference because most states have banned cages. So you'll see cage-free, free range, organic. It's still grown all in the same environment. So, you know, they're looking at bottom dollar. So they build these giant warehouses and cram a bunch of chickens in there. They have to have so much per square feet per bird, but the living conditions is pretty much all the same. They've never seen the light of day. They've never seen a cricket or grasshopper, you know, grass and clover. And it all just, all those toxins that goes into their body, we are partaking of that as well.
Right. Okay, so can we go back, before we get into the labels, stay tuned, everybody. We're going to get into the labels of everything, but what's one thing? I mean, obviously it's that your chickens are free range versus thing. Can you give us an specific example of how a regenerative farmer like you would do something different than a conventional farmer?
Yeah.
And maybe it's that, maybe it's the chickens, but what comes to mind, I know it's all encompassing. You mentioned like multifaceted reasons, but just to give people like this is just one of many things that we do differently.
So what we do differently with our chickens, I mean, you see, I've hopefully painted a horror picture of what's in the industry. Ours is complete opposite. Everything you can think of is complete opposite. So our chicks, we get our chicks, they're about 1 to 2 days old. They go onto heat lamps. So chicks normally, they can't regulate their body temperature. Normally they'd be under mama, you know, in the feathers, and the mom would keep them warm. So we put ours under heat lamps. They start indoors for 2 weeks and they're on a deep bed mulching. So they're scratching through, pecking at the mulch, turning over the manure, and a very clean environment. After 2 weeks, they get their true feathers, which then they can regulate their body temperature. After that, they go out onto pasture. So we have a 10 by 12 shelter. Each group has about 75 birds in each shelter. And I move the shelter every single day.
I can vouch for that. I see it. moving around.
Yes. And so like that's one thing I don't like when chicken season starts, and yes, there is a chicken season. You can't grow a tomato in December. You can't grow a chicken in December. And so a pasture raised chicken, I should say. So when I got there, it's every single day. There's no day off. And they get moved every single day because I don't want, they do put down a good manure load on each day, and they get a new, clean, fresh section under that shelter every single day. So that does multiple things. One, first thing they do is they run up as I'm pulling the shelter towards me. They come run at my feet, and they're chasing all the crickets and grasshoppers that are jumping out. Any insects that are jumping, they're nailing those things. All that nutrients that cricket was harvesting and growing its body now just went into that chicken, and then ultimately into us and our consumers. So then also they're getting fresh forage that is non-existent in conventional grown chicken, even organic. They've never seen a blade of grass. And so they're getting, you'll see them, they'll start tearing. You listen and you can hear just tearing of vegetation, clover, grass, all the multi-species of plants that we have in there. They're consuming all that. Mm-hmm. And then leaving that manure, that does an amazing thing of breaking a pathogen cycle. You know, when a chicken is constantly on walking around their own manure,
yeah,
that's when you have disease. And that's why they have to have antibiotics given.
Yeah.
So we don't have that. And the amazing thing about that, and probably getting too far into the weeds because I love this stuff, but
people are eating this up right now.
Wait till they try chicken. They'll really be eating it. But yeah, so the incredible thing is the manure that's left behind. The darkest, deepest, tallest vegetation that is on the property is after the chickens go through there. Mm. That manure load creates this incredible, incredible lush forage in the pasture.
Right.
Because we put the perfect amount of manure per day. So if we left them there for, you know, 5 days, it's too much manure for the microbes in the soil to break that down. You actually degrade your pasture. So that pulsing of manure and resting allows the plants to come back in a way that it's unbelievable. Like even in December, when everything goes dormant, that still is green,
right.
You know, because it has way more nutrients. Then we haven't got into this yet, but the cows, when the cows then rotate through the property, they're going straight for that because that's the most nutrients anywhere on the pasture.
Wow.
So it's a really awesome thing.
It's powerful. So when you talk about, I mean, you're called Heal Farms, and what we're talking about is not only using food as medicine from a nutrient density, bioavailable nutrient density for people, and healing humans with food as medicine,
yes,
but it's also healing the earth.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is from an environmental standpoint. I'm just giving people reasons why this is so important, because when you're talking about the soil microbiome, like, I don't know how, let's maybe touch on this, like what's happening to the soil microbiome and what's happening environmentally, and why people like yourself, local farmers, are doing so much to actually heal the environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Just on a carbon sequestration alone, pasture is one of the best forms of carbon sink. So it is pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. I mean, you think about it, plants, right? Plants need carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen to make sugar. Mm-hmm. And so they get oxygen and hydrogen from water, and then they use carbon dioxide from our breathing out, animals breathing out, to take that into their, you know, cells and turn that into sugar. And what they do is they take that and they form that down into the roots. Mm-hmm. Those roots stay there. That stays there. Mm-hmm. And one of the most damaging things that we can do to an environment is to plow that up. So you look at crops, I mean, they're just releasing all that carbon that's stored in there.
Yeah.
So having a really well-managed pasture, you're taking all the carbon from the atmosphere and storing it in the soil. And it stays there until it's opened up. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't ever be opened up. But the impact that ruminants, cows, sheep, that they have of taking that forage and converting that into manure cycles that carbon back down into the ground. And the microbes are, I mean, you look at a teaspoon, I believe it's a teaspoon of soil has over a billion organisms living in it. And you think of, like, you know, just on, like, we have a, where our chickens are at, is like an 8-acre field. That's how many, I don't even know the number, quadrillions of, mm-hmm. of upon quadrillions of organisms that you have living in there that are all just metabolizing the methane and the carbon and breaking everything down. You have a living ecosystem mm-hmm. underneath that soil that we don't ever see. Mm-hmm. And it's such an important ecosystem. So that's why we always look at the plants, how the plants are reacting mm-hmm. is a reflection mm. of the health of the soil ecosystem.
Wow. Yeah. So you're basically in a way it could be said that regenerative farming is mimicking nature, right?
Absolutely.
But it's mimicking nature, but also for production, right? It's like yes. balancing ecology with productivity and I guess output, right?
Yes.
To feed people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, nature is the greatest example of what we should be doing. So if we were to take the wildebeest in Serengeti to the bison in North America, I mean, we don't have them anymore, but we used to have anywhere from 40 to 60 million bison running around the United States before they were almost extinct. That we, you know, they shot them all, but that all created this incredible ecosystem to where these large animals grazed these areas. And then what do you see come after that? You see birds follow them, right? Cause mm-hmm. they're scratching through the paddy, the cow pies, right? Mm-hmm. The manure of the bison, they're picking at larvae and beetles that go in there, dung beetles, and they're consuming that. And then they spread that fertility out. And you looked at the soils, they estimated anywhere from like, you know, 10 to plus 10 or 8 to 10 feet deep, that the topsoil was the roots were down in that soil. And that's been, you know, through the plow and, mm-hmm. you know, plant agriculture, it's been all that topsoil has been eroded. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the same model that we mimic. We have the cows come in. And since, for instance, our meat birds, right? It gets to a point where the grass gets too tall. One, I can't pull the shelters through that tall grass.
Right.
And two, you know, a chicken's not going to be eating a 24-inch blade of grass, but a cow can. And so they take what is, you know, we can't eat that. That's cellulose. We can't consume that. Mm-hmm. But since they have that four-chambered stomach, they can ruminate that, take mm-hmm. that, break that down, and turn it into fat and protein that is incredibly healthy for consumption on the human body. And so when they do that, they're taking that grass down. That allows the chickens then to go and get that regrowth that's lush and tender, and that they can metabolize that. And then you create that cycle. So mm-hmm. so then the chickens go in, they're scratching through the cow pies, spreading out the manure. Yeah. And you're just building upon the manure layer and carbon layer that you're laying down. You're just building and building. And that's how you actually grow soil.
Right.
You know, there's no other way. There's no other way to sequester carbon or grow soil other than that process.
Right. Which is the soil microbiome is so intimately connected to the gut microbiome. So you look at the epidemic rise of autoimmune conditions,
absolutely.
Everybody, it's linked to what's not happening on a mass scale, and the destruction of the soil microbiome is so much connected to why so many people that are listening to this right now have digestive problems, have
absolutely.
Inflammatory problems, have autoimmune issues, have brain health issues, in part because we are what we eat, but we are what we eats.
Yeah.
We are.
Yes.
Whatever we're eating, what are they eating?
Right. And chase that down. It's like, what are the plants consuming? It's yeah. like, you know, if they don't have healthy soils.
What are the bugs eating?
Yeah. What are they? Well, yeah. What are the microbes eating? So, and it all creates, it's a cycle, you know, it's
yeah.
a beautiful cycle of plants, animals, and humans. And if they're not all managed correctly, you have unhealthy products. But when it's managed correctly, you know, taking nature, looking at that as our example, it's unbelievable. You have healthy animals, healthy plants, and healthy humans.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so let's talk about, we're talking about eggs, chickens, pig, cows.
Yes.
These are things that you have on the farm.
Yep.
Give people a perusing of the nutrient density difference. People often talk about like the color of the yolk versus like the conventional egg versus an egg on
yes.
a regenerative farm. But go beyond with the meat as well. So people can understand the difference of why they should go for this type of meat versus another kind.
Okay, so I'll start with the chicken because that's like the bulk of what we grow. The chicken, so people always say it like, oh, you know, you kind of want this sedentary chicken, right? Like, oh, if it walks around, it's going to be tough. It's actually not true. Mm. The reason why our chicken, and I'll put it against anything out there, it is so incredibly tender. Literally, customers, I agree, you can cut it with a fork. It's that tender. I mean, you've tried it.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason for that is because they are getting oxygen and exercise, that oxygenation of the muscles, it creates a tenderness. And then their diet. Let's look at their diet. I mean, it is, you go get free range organic, their diet consists of one thing, is grain. It's soy, you know, corn. If it's organic, okay, great, you know, but they're still only getting one thing, seeds. And so that is a very limited nutrient profile. Ours have 30 different species of plants in the pasture. They're consuming those plants. The flavor and tenderness and nutrient profile completely changes when an animal goes on a pasture. So I think omega 3-6 ratio cuts in half when you put it out on pasture. So it just, you know, it spikes in health potential when you do that. And so that's on the chicken side of things. Then you go to the eggs. Our egg layers are doing the same thing. They are, now they get in a large area. They're about like a third of an acre and they get moved about every week. So they have a little bit more roaming area to kind of range around and forage for things. But the yolk on these things are so dark orange. I show everyone, when I do farmers markets and, you know, events like that, I show a picture of organic free range and then ours. So organic free range are these flat, pale yellow yolks. You know, the whites are just completely clear and flat. You look at ours, dark, perky orange, and the white has like a hint of color and shade into it too. Mm-hmm. It's all because of that nutrient profile. Mm-hmm. They're consuming a diet that has the lycopenes in it, and all that diet that they're consuming, the grasshoppers, the crickets, that's all going into their eggs.
Right.
And the flavor is unbelievable. So I have an interesting thing with eggs. I was talking to a lady and she said, yeah, I used to grow chickens. We used to have them out on pasture. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah. She's like, we did about 20,000 birds. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. She said, yeah, but right around the 60s and 70s, people started growing chickens indoors. And I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, I know about that. And that's what we have now today. And she said, yeah. And what the consumer wanted, they didn't want our eggs because they were orange. And I was like, really? She said, yeah. The growers of the producers that were putting the chickens inside, they started marketing their eggs as that the consumer, you want pale yellow yolks. You want light yellow yolks, not dark orange. So people got tricked into this, deceived, and thinking, oh yeah, I want pale yellow. The reason why they were having pale yellow is because they're only getting grain. So they're getting less nutrients, and then they changed the culture to where they wanted that pale yellow. So it's just unbelievable. It's like, well, man, we can make more money if we put chickens indoors, and then we'll just market to them and tell them that that's what they want.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that, that's where we're constantly trying to re-educate people. Right.
And
it's
isn't like, that so also not on maybe less of a nutrient standpoint, but all the white eggs were the thing for the time.
And the white eggs came in that point too. Yeah. The white leghorn is a very good producer, but
so it's about profits again.
It's about profits. It's all profit driven. Yeah. So that's where, you know, we're not, I would say I'm integrity driven. I pride myself. I do not compromise. For us, you know, we wanted to grow our own food because you can't trust what's in the grocery store. You can't trust even some of these people that are selling stuff online. You don't know them. You don't know what they're putting in there. And so one thing that was important to us is that we're growing our own food. I don't compromise on things. I don't have any synthetics, no antibiotics, no hormones, no GMOs, no vaccines, none of that. I want the purest meat that I could possibly feed to our family. And I want to pass that on to our customers.
Right. And that's knowing you are zealous to say the least about this. You're like messianic about it all. So what's the solution for the consumer out there? Is it that they have to go and like interview their farmers? I mean, how... The person that's listening is, okay, great. I can't trust the labels. Yeah. I can't. What do I do? Okay. So give us some tips.
It's the biggest thing. And I've thought about this too. Cause like, how do you trust your farmer? Like the only way is you can look at that person and look at their life. And I mean, you have to have a relationship with that person. You know, you don't get that. You definitely don't get that in the grocery store. You may get it with some of the people if they're being transparent online. But that's, you know, if that's what you're looking for, I want to be your farmer. I have that integrity, and it's something I pride myself. I tell all my customers, we have full transparency. We're not hiding anything. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to hide. And so, you know, a lot of people say, are you organic? I will never be organic because here's the problem. With being certified organic, we're going through a third party to say, oh yeah, this guy, he meets these certain standards. I match every one of the certified organic standards, and in almost everything, I exceed it, right? You don't have to have that chicken out on grass, out on pasture to be mm-hmm. organic. I could put that bird in a house, you know, and then call it organic. What does that do? That does nothing. Mm-hmm. And then also you look at, you still rely on the trust of that farmer, even being organic, mm-hmm. because they aren't doing chemical synthetic testing on the products. Mm-hmm. So what's to say if I don't go out and spray 2,4-D on my pastures at 2 a.m, who's going to know? Well, you're going to know me because you know my integrity. You know that I don't compromise. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it really boils down to knowing your farmer and knowing what they really are about, and, you know, their whole life, it should portray yeah. that.
So let's unpack a few things there. I know a lot of local farmers that just said what you said, is that there's so much bureaucracy and it's very expensive to jump all through those hoops. And at the end of the day, if you're talking about community eating, eating locally, supporting local farmers,
yes,
it really doesn't, they're not testing the makeup of the food, organic versus no. not, right? It's an inspector goes to the farm and are they checking the things? But you don't know what they're doing as soon as the inspector leaves.
Right, because the farmer is still responsible for reporting all that stuff. Okay. So it's like, okay, yeah. So once again, you're still banking on the farmer. So why have right. this certification? You know, and what did it... I should have looked up the number before, but I think it was in the trillions of dollars. It was like $30 trillion that had been made off false organic labeling.
I hear it all the time.
Yeah, it's all the time. And yeah. so, you know, now we do buy certified organic feed. To me, it's a better potential that it doesn't have synthetics, right?
Right.
There's like one step above.
Exactly. Like, it's a good move in the right direction.
Right, in the right direction. So like, you know, if I'm buying something that I know was sprayed, then it's guaranteed on there. But I'm paying a premium for that.
Right.
So I'm hoping that it does have that on there. But ultimately, it still boils down to the farmer being honest with how they're documenting.
Yeah, got it. For my telehealth patients who choose to drink alcohol, they want to know, what are my favorite recommendations? What are my better for you options? And one of the only things that I recommend in this category is hard kombucha. And a brand that I love that has been filling in this white space for a long time is Juneshine. Unlike non-alcoholic kombucha, what Juneshine has, it doesn't have that acidic, vinegary bite. It tastes much more like a champagne because it's made with green tea and honey, June kombucha, instead of black tea and sugar, which is regular kombucha. What I love about Juneshine is that they have ingredient transparency. All the ingredients are listed on the can, unlike other alcoholic beverages, and they're all items you can actually pronounce. They have no preservatives like sulfites, sodium benzoate, which can make many people feel like crap and drive hangovers and headaches and digestive problems. There's no artificial sweeteners, and they have nutrients like vitamin B, vitamin C, and antioxidants, which are honestly all recommended for hangovers and are found in their products to varying degrees. And these drinks are low in sugar. It's one of their biggest differentiators. In comparison to many canned options, they're far less sugar. Sugar is known to increase the severity of hangovers. Honestly, my telehealth patients who choose to drink, they love this stuff. Juneshine can be found in over 10,000 stores across the United States. It's available at all the retailers you're already visiting for groceries and alcohol, like Whole Foods, Target, Ralph's, Vons, Albertsons, Kroger's, Wegmans, Total Wine, BevMo, Safeway, and so much more. We've worked out a special deal for our listeners. At any store, you can buy one Juneshine package and get the second for only 1 penny, 1 cent. That's $12 to $20 in value. I recommend trying one of their best-selling variety packs. It's a great way to try all of their delicious flavors. Go to juneshine.com/WillCole. Just text a photo of your receipt and they'll Venmo you immediately. It's that easy. That's juneshine.com/WillCole. juneshine.com/WillCole. There are so many headlines about contamination from heavy metals, pesticides, toxins, not just in the environment, but what we put in our bodies as well. That's why I love brands like Puri, pure natural food supplements. I love their omega-3 capsules and so many other products from Puri. Omega-3 is an essential fatty acid that we need in our diet. It supports your heart health, your brain, your eyes, your skin health. I love that Puri's O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil offers a high dose of 2,000 milligrams of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, the EPA and DHA, found in natural triglyceride form. It's also certified clean and fresh by the Clean Label product and by IFOS. And every batch is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants, including heavy metals, pesticides, dioxins, and bisphenols. I am such a fan of Puri's transparency. You can scan the QR code on the bottle to see the test results for the specific batch. It's so cool. Be aware of what you're putting in your body. Trust Puri like I do. Right now, Puri is offering my listeners 20% off site-wide. Go now to the special URL, puri.com/WillCole, and use my promo code WillCole. This even applies to the already discounted subscriptions. You'll get almost a third off the price. You have to go to puri.com/WillCole. puri.com/WillCole.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So what do you say to the person that says, well, eating like this costs more?
Yeah.
What do you say to that? And number two, what do you say? Would you rather someone not eat meat at all if they can't get this sort of beyond organic, regenerative, local farming criteria?
No, I wouldn't. And I feel like I've kind of changed my position on, well, no, I haven't always, but I know that it's still, I know that the research still shows that eating meat is definitely more beneficial. And yes, I'm not going to make excuses. Our chicken is more expensive than what you're going to find. Mm-hmm. You look at what goes into it and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
But just today I had somebody literally an hour before I had to leave. He came and he's like, yeah, I want to get some chicken. And he saw the price and was like, okay, like totally sticker shock. You know, I'm not your cheap chicken. I mean, if you want that, go to the grocery store and try and find the discount chicken. There's so much labor involved in what we do. You know, you go to a conventional farmer, he's not moving the chickens every single day. He's not buying, you know, feed that's over double the cost of GMO.
And it's not mass produced.
You're
talking
about
really.
Yeah, we're a small scale farm. Yeah. You know, you can't, you know, our profit margins are tight. And so, yeah, it is costly, but you know, you pay for what you get, but the ultimate, like, if you're telling me, you know, I'm probably going to upset people, but a full vegan diet versus, you know, what you find. Yeah. I would push them towards like, you got to eat meat. Like, you know,
so pragmatically you're like, okay, if you can't do everything perfectly, right. There's no such thing as perfect anyways, but at least lean into better for you options. All right. And then what would you say to somebody that is, like, where do they start? Do they go to the farmer's market? Obviously, you guys ship around the country,
yeah,
too.
So we just launched shipping. So we're a great start. Here's one thing. I always say, you know your farmer and trust them. So it's like, well, how do I do that if I live, we're in Pennsylvania. What if they're like in Missouri or something? It's like, how do I do that? I try to always post. We do the Instagram thing. I try to post stories every day. It's a way of digitally showing, connecting,
People love your stories.
All right.
It's like behind the scenes view of what the farm's like. So I guess in that way, it is using social media to keep people in on educating them, informing them of what goes into their food.
Right. And so, I do love the whole education thing. I worked for the university for, 5 years and always loved educating people. Even at markets and, new customers that I meet, I love educating. I love telling people about this. You guys could call me up. I'll probably spend too much time on the phone talking about this
because
it's my life's passion. But yeah, I think it's so important that people know where their food is coming from. And that's why I try to do the stories. I try to put a little highlight of the day and educate people on what we're doing, even though, sometimes it's hard for me to, when cows are taken off running, like try to record them or whatnot. But yeah, that's one thing that I try to add to our product.
Yeah. So I guess in lieu of, because we're talking about still online shipping, you're still a local farmer. You're just using the best of modernity, which is social media and getting to know you. Then you obviously can call him up.
Yeah.
If you want to do that. But it's
And we have tours too. I mean, that's one thing I love doing. Yes. We're doing tours now and slowly adding to that because it's so important. I mean, if you don't know what you're putting on your dinner table, I wouldn't put it something on there, that I didn't know. So yeah, I think that's huge when purchasing your meats.
What's your favorite, if you're talking about chicken or organic, regenerative farmed, like all the highest quality chickens that ate organic feed and they're out eating bugs too in the sunlight, they're getting all this nutrient. What's your favorite way to cook chicken?
Well, my favorite, we have mild Italian sausage, and it is, I always tell this at farmers markets. I'm like, I feel like I'm like throwing this like sales pitch, but it is so good. I'll put it against any sausage out there. Mm-hmm. I'm literally like, I tell that a lot to like all the new people that like come up and try and, tell them what we're about. And I have another lady that's kind of waiting in line there. And I was like, our mild chicken sausage is unreal. And I said, I say that a lot and people probably think I'm just like selling you a product. And I was like, I'm not. And then this lady, she bought it last week. She was like, he's not. It's amazing. She's like, he's my new dealer. So I was like, why don't you try it? It's so good. Yeah. But that is, we have the sausage. I like the thighs.
You have amazing wings too.
The wings are awesome. Hey, I wasn't doing wings and then we did a package of wings and I was like, I've been like not eating these. They're so good. I mean, and you buy wings at the store and they're these dinky little things, you have to nibble off to get a couple bites. These are full bites of meat. I mean, they're, cause we're not processing them at 3 weeks. These are full size birds.
Okay. So that's another thing about profits too, right? You are letting them grow longer.
Yes. Yeah. And after about week, so our birds that we can process them at 7 weeks old. Typically in the store, when you see like a small Cornish, that's like a 3 to 4 week old bird. And then, so they'll take like the wings off of it and sell those to, whatever wing store restaurants or whatever. But ours are 7 weeks old. And at that week five, that's when they start really, really pulling down the feed. I mean, they start consuming like crazy. I mean, and so, yeah, that's when the feed costs rise. Definitely.
Right.
But yeah, that you're right.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a bigger topic and this is not what this conversation is for, but I'm curious because I know at the farmers markets, you will get from time to time, the person that says, I'm a vegan. I don't like this. I don't want to hurt animals. Like it's about not the health perspective because that's a different topic. Hopefully we've talked about nutrient density enough and protein people, healthy fat. Like there's a number of macro and micro reasons why I'm not getting into that. But what do you say to someone that's like animal welfare or I don't want to hurt an animal? Obviously the life of the chicken living way better on heel farms.
Oh yeah.
It's living way better on regenerative farms. So there's no question that the life of the chicken is living a wonderful life. It's not stressed. It's eating good food.
Yeah.
It's doing what it was designed to do. It's foraging, but it's still dying at the end of the day.
Yes.
So what do you say to the person that's like, you know what? That's still cruel.
Yeah. I feel like I engage. I don't back down.
I'm not going to get this. I was going to say you're an Enneagram 8, which is like he's like the purest challenger. he's up for the debate.
Yeah. I love debate. I love discussion. So when people, I hand them a flyer, they're like, oh yeah, we're Heal Farms. And they're like, I'm vegetarian. And I'm like, I got to ask you why. And like, I want to know why, because I'm honestly looking for the people, which what you brought up. And I think I've only had it once, but it was their daughter that they were kind of advocating for. But most people say, oh, like they just feel better. It's like healthier. And I'm like, you should read a couple books. But okay, so on the like animal.
Real fast. I feel like so many people have hyperchlorhydria and they're not breaking down proteins and fats very well because they have gut health problems. Mm. So I do think there's something to that, but it's not normal. It's okay. Like they're having problems processing foods.
But it's like they're treating a symptom instead of the cause.
So they're avoiding something that they're not breaking down. Instead of healing their guts, they're just avoiding that food.
Wow.
And sometimes I do think it's psychosomatic where it's like they have stress and and negativity around it. And that mind-body connection can also impact an outcome.
That a breakdown of all proteins or just animal proteins?
All proteins, but they notice it more with things that are richer with complete proteins.
Hmm.
And fish tends to break down easier than some of the other meats.
Okay,
and chickens better than red meat. So they will typically be okay with the chickens, but the red meat, they'll say, oh no, it just sits heavy with me. Okay, I can't do it. And then they therefore think red meat's not good for them. Yep. No, it's a sign that you need to help with digestion and absorption.
That's interesting because a lot of vegetarians that I talk to, they said, well, we eat fish. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that pescatarians.
Why didn't you just say you're pescatarian?
They still identify as vegetarians. That label's important to them because they feel holier than thou. Pescatarian's less cool.
Right. Yeah. Pescatarian sounds like you're a pessimist.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. It's just like not as... It's not as hip. So let's get back to what I interrupted you about.
So on the like, I don't want to hurt animals. That's a big one. I've been like waiting for a person to have the discussion with. But
now's your time.
Huh?
Now's your time.
Here it is. Okay.
In front of
I'm here.
A couple hundred thousand people.
Yeah. So, okay. I did plant agriculture for over a decade. I'm going to tell you right now, if you are eating a vegan, vegetarian diet because you are afraid of killing animals, you are causing more death than if you were to eat an animal, like a paleo diet. The amount of death that happens, first of all, we need to get away that like death is a bad thing because everything has to die. But that's like a total side
changer.
Yeah,
I mean, we're a part of nature.
Yes.
It's absolutely...
Yes. Without death, we cannot create that ending cycle. I mean, manure is a form of death and that creates life to the soil.
Yeah. It's like Western societies, I think, demonization of death or a fear of death.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So I'll paint a picture, right? We're gonna plant tomatoes. So we go in with a subsoiler. We're going in with these shanks that are about 2.5 feet long and we're ripping up all the soil. Plants get shredded in that. And what comes out? Well, all the gophers start coming out. The ground, you know, rodents start coming out. And then hawks start coming, picking them off, okay? If they survive past that, then we come in with discs, okay? These are very large, you know, depending on size, you know, about 1 foot to large 2 feet, these metal discs that all they do is they slice up and grind up that soil, releasing all of the carbon back into the atmosphere and destroying the entire microorganisms in that soil. It's a nuclear missile blowing this up it's just killing everything. Mm. It's just too much oxygen. Okay. Mm. They're just oxidizing and dying. You're releasing all the moisture. So they get that to a form that the soil can be molded and shaped into a bed shaper. Then they come in and they plant one crop. It's all tomatoes.
Yeah, so it's, you know,
it's monoculture.
Yeah.
They plant that, and any pest that comes in there, they're either pre-spraying to prevent pests from getting it, or spraying because there's an infestation. Whether it's organic or not, they're still spraying pesticide. You cannot spray a crop on a large, or you cannot get away without spraying a crop on any, whether it's organic or not. Now, the organic producers, they are spraying with an organic pesticide. Sometimes that's gentler on the ecosystem. Sometimes it's more damaging. There's some organic pesticides that kill nematodes. That's all your earthworms and, you know, micro nematodes in there that are exchanging nutrients. You know, they're eating organisms in there, all creating that, you know, there's a whole ecosystem under there. And so then we go into the rabbits, the mice, the birds, all of that, they get destroyed at a large number that people don't see. I mean, they see the package of tomatoes, they see the box of noodles, and they think, oh yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not killing anything. They are killing 25 times more sentient beings with a vegetarian vegan diet than they are with a, you know, if they were to kill a cow a year, you know, and that was that protein. So there's something that, like, the American mindset is like, oh, a cow is more important than the bunny rabbit. You know, I'm not going to go in. I did it. I mean, I was out there plowing, disking up things, you know, tons of death. There's tons of death in
nature has death. There's no way around it.
And then nature has death. Yeah. Look at, you know, I mean, but on a large scale,
this is like intentional.
Yeah. This is like, yeah, you're going out, you want to kill. I mean, when you're growing, you want one thing growing.
Right.
You don't want gophers. You don't want ground squirrels. You don't want groundhogs. You don't want pests. You want it all dead so you can grow one thing.
Right.
It's, you know, it's again, profit driven, right?
Profiting,
you know, they don't want a blemish on the tomato. They want it perfectly uniform. That's what industrial agriculture has produced now.
Yeah. And we're so divorced from where our food comes from that we like this sort of cognitive dissonance that it's just the noodle. It's just the tomato.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And it goes again, you know, you don't know your farmer. You don't know where that wheat came from, the tomato, whatever, the lettuce, you know, you don't know who's picking that. Did they wash their hands before they use the restroom? Like, you know what I mean? Like
even we're talking about animals at this point, but then I think of the workers' rights and the the subhuman level that a lot of these big ag farmers, the farmers are not treated fairly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we rely heavily on humans. You know, we can only mechanically harvest so much. There's more and more each year as robotics get more developed. But yeah, you're picking green beans. There's no tool or implement that can hand harvest a green bean. So they're out there picking them. I mean, I've met many of them. So yeah, it's nobody's hiding that from me. Cause I mean, I was a part of it, you know, and I hated it. I hated having to spray it. Like, I've done it. I that's where I came from. I was taught in the university system, a lot of the classes, conventional way of growing, right? Because you're going to go out, you're going to get your job. Mm-hmm. So you got to know how to do what the industry wants.
Right. And like you said, with the one farmer you talked to where the things started to shift, so many farmers are forced in many ways, right? Because it's so alluring economically to make money, because farmers are struggling anyways.
Yeah.
And they're going to more of a lucrative system of this monoculture, right?
Right.
And that's why the wheat and the soy and the corn, it's so tied into the subsidizing of money, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And on like the pesticide, like, I totally get it, because let's say you're like 2 days away from harvesting your crop and you have an outbreak in aphids, you know, like, what are you going to do? Like, you're just going to, like, what if you have, you know, 500 acres of whatever green beans, like, you're not going to risk that. So, you know, it's not all like, I shouldn't be too hard on the conventional guys. It's like, you know, sometimes you do get that, and it is a tool in the toolbox that some farmers use to spray, you know. And for the organic growers, like, there are certain crops that don't require as much, they're resistant to pests and stuff like that. So you can get away with not having to use pesticides, but yeah, it's still used out there.
Yeah. My friend, I could talk to you all day long about all this stuff. As you know, the podcast is called The Art of Being Well.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of every episode, you know, because you listen to the show, hopefully, you're my family. I'd be really
I'm the
sad,
only one that
right? You're the only. That's the truth. He's the only family that I have that listens to my podcast,
and nobody will know that you're saying this.
No,
it's just between us.
No. Yeah, right.
We don't even need to keep it a secret.
We don't have to keep it. No one in the family will hear this conversation.
They'll be like, wait, Adam's on there. I'm like, listen. I know,
now we're going to get a few more viewers in the family. Not because of me. Right. So this podcast is called The Art of Being Well. This is your Art of Being Well. This is Adam Mason's. This is Adam freaking Mason's Art of Being Well. First question is, what is the worst tasting healthy food? It tastes disgusting, but you still eat it because there's so much nutrition science around it.
I don't eat it often, but liver. And I'm curious to try our beef. We've processed our first beef, and so I'm really excited about that. But I want to give that another shot. I've tried our chicken liver. It still has that liver flavored, but it's not, it's so mild, and it's because of that diet. The liver has a punch to it that sometimes I just can't get past, but I have eaten
I will say this. People on my telehealth team, we were walking during lunch and I was telling them you're going to be on the podcast, and they all are loyal Heal Farm customers.
Yeah.
And Megan on the telehealth team and the patient team loves the hearts.
Yes.
She loves the chicken heart.
The hearts are actually really good. There is not that. I mean, the flavor's great. I call it the calamari of the land. They have, heart has that texture of calamari, kind of that chewier flavor. And the hearts are good, man. Like, that's one thing. So yeah, if you know, getting the heart.
If you're organ meat, maybe, if you're new to organ meats, maybe you wouldn't think to go to the heart because you're like skeeved out by it. But actually, texture and taste-wise, people like it better.
Yeah, and the gizzards, we have gizzards too. We had a chef that braised it for 4 hours. He said after like 2 hours, that toughness that you would pull it out, he said you keep going and it just softens everything up. And I was like, wow. So yeah, he's been buying them. He loves them.
That's awesome. Yeah. And something for people that do have a, let's just say, preference to be more plant-based, not to always go back to that, but I always tell patients that are more plant-based and if they're open to eating something, and we have some patients that for whatever religious reasons or ethical reasons, they won't eat meat. And I have to be a pragmatist and build them the best plant-based protocol for their health. But most people are, even if they prefer being more plant-based, they're open to bringing some things in. When you're eating higher nutrient-dense foods like we're talking about here, and especially if you're eating nose to tail or beak to tail, you actually, if you want to, you can eat less meat and get more out of it because nutrient density is increased.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just food for thought for people that are vegetarian or vegetarian adjacent.
Yes.
Pescatarians pretending to be vegetarians. What's your favorite natural scent? Like something in nature?
Like nature or?
Anything else, anything from the earth.
Okay, so when we used to grow at Cal Poly Pomona, we had citrus groves.
Oh, they smell amazing.
Oh, man.
There's nothing like it.
In the... Let's see, I guess it was like the springtime, man. The orange blossoms, that was just unbelievable. We'd walk down, we'd have like picnics and they was just...
It's amazing.
That's an incredible aroma.
Yeah, that's like just strong orange smell.
Yeah.
Your grandparents, they used to tell me, Grandpa Mason used to tell me when he, when they lived, which is like in the middle of LA now, it's busy, crazy. It used to be all orange groves.
Yeah.
Which you think of how, like, we appreciated that one farm, but that's what all of Southern California used to smell like, or at least large parts of it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. What's your favorite, well, let's just say this, coffee or tea, if you had to pick? And I know the answer here, but.
Okay, coffee makes me, like, too aggressive, like, agitated. It, like, I don't, should we get into the coffee?
Yeah,
Let's not get into this right now. Tea would be, okay, I like the flavor of coffee. But tea, I'd probably go towards tea because people that are sensitive to caffeine, like me.
His entire family is sensitive to caffeine. This isn't a family problem.
Highly sensitive.
I'm trying to help them out.
It's not as like, it's more mild. It's like.
Yeah. All right. I like it. What's your dream vacation? Anything in the world. Money's not an object.
We want, someday we'd like to go to New Zealand, do the. There's tons of farms there. I'd love to see that. I've heard like you need like at least a month to explore those that area. But and
it sounds fun.
Definitely got to see the Lord of the Rings stuff.
Yeah, love it. We were going to watch all the Lord of the Rings movies. Yeah,
it just fell apart.
We made it through one.
One. Yeah.
It took us 3 months to plan that.
Yeah. It did. It's just too many kids.
Too many small kids.
And like bedtimes, it was like.
Yeah. It did. We didn't get far. We did not get far. And Candace, who's on the mental health is physical health episode, she was part of this group of people trying to watch Lord of the Rings viewing party. We failed miserably. Failed. What's the weirdest, this is completely relative, what's the weirdest thing you've done for your wellness? I want to know. I don't know what you're going to say.
Oh, man. The weirdest thing? Oh, gosh. Well, I experiment a lot with my wellness. I won't go in there. Everyone will be like, dude, you're a freak. I do the cold showers. I have not touched the hot knob on the shower.
This is good.
Since November of 2017. And that is like, when I set my mind to something, I don't compromise.
Yeah, this is what I mean about the zealot. Like, he's like, he is exclusively cold shower.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a bleak existence.
It's totally fine in the summer, but man, when it's negative, you know, 5 outside and I got to take a shower. Ooh, I mean, the water's probably still in the 40s or something coming out of the faucet, but it is brutal.
Yeah, that's a weird thing because it's not like people do the cold shower thing, whatever, but you only do it.
Yeah, and I have not, and I don't think I will ever take.
People are going to be like, well, what's the point, dude? Like, why are you so into this?
I always forget the why. I always forget the conclusion, or I remember the conclusions. Like, people are like, oh, why don't you drink Coca-Cola? Well, I remember that like 10 years ago when I stopped drinking soda, like what, you know, whatever nonsense are in there, the caramel colorings and whatever. So I know it will.
What do you get? Well, how do you feel? Yeah. Let's go off of how you feel.
Well, gosh, the euphoric feeling. It's like a mini cold plunge.
Yeah. So this is probably the dopamine. Yeah. It's serotonin, a dopamine increase.
Yeah. Like I don't like to take, like if I took a shower at 9 o'clock at night, I'm up till almost, you know, midnight because of that hit. But I know it's great for the body. To me, it's kind of a mind challenge. I like to challenge battle between the mind and the body. I like to put my body into challenging positions. Mm-hmm. And the cold shower, my body doesn't want to do. And it's a fun
battle.
It's
almost like a meditation in like a surrender in a way.
Yeah.
And non-resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's how I see it for you too. And for many people it is. For sure. What's a book? You're a voracious reader. What is a book? It could be fiction, nonfiction, that you've read in the past year that got you thinking in a new way. It was like just very, you know, insightful, sticks out in your mind.
For like on the wellness side of things?
No, it could be anything. People have said science fiction on the show. People have said self-help, finance.
Recently or like overall?
Just within the past year.
Oh, within the past year.
Because you've probably read a lot in the past year.
I did do Atlas Shrugged. That was a good one.
Classic.
Ayn Rand. Yeah, that was a long one. On a health side of things, The Vegetarian Myth by Lier Keith. Whew, that was awesome. Like so dense on the science. She did such an amazing job at that. Yeah, that was a really good one. Like, you know some things, right? And then you read that and you're like, oh man, she went so into depth in that. It was really good.
Well, that kind of works with today's conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why it's fresh in my mind right now. But, yeah.
I love it. So where can people go? Where do people go? I know we have a special code for everybody. Where do they go to learn more about your work and get some of this yummy
food? So we want to offer everyone listening 15% off on their next purchase. Okay. And then they'll also be entered for, we do a free monthly giveaway. So if you use the promo code Dr. Will Cole,
okay,
you will get 15% off your order. And we do ship. So we ship free if you order $249 to like 20 different states. If you're outside of that area, you have to pay the difference on what the shipping cost is.
But you ship to all states.
We ship to California, you know, so anywhere. Perfect. Anywhere in the lower 48. Yeah. And then if you want to sign up for our giveaway, go to healfarms.com/Dr. Will Cole.
Okay. So
Dr.
Will Cole. So yeah, Heal Farms, HEALFARMS .com/ Dr. Will Cole.
Yes.
Okay, sweet. And then they can go, that's how they get into the giveaway and you give away free food.
Yes. Yeah, we do a chicken package that has like pretty much all of our cuts in there. Awesome. So we do, I mean, there's ground chicken. We have three different flavors of our chicken sausage that are just amazing. wings, thighs, drumsticks. We do bones for bone broth. People doing bone broth. And we're actually going to sell. We're working with a chef who's actually taking our bones, some of the excess. He's cooking them down to actually pre-made bone broth. So we're gonna be having bone broth.
Amazing.
Pre-made. You just thaw that thing out and heat it up.
That's crazy. Use code Dr. Will Cole, Dr. Will Cole.
Yes.
At checkout for anything for 15% off.
And we could put it in the link.
I'll put it in the show notes for everybody.
Yeah, the show notes
as well. And I didn't even get to say this, but like you bring kids that have never seen a farm in their life.
Yeah.
Like kids that are really in bad situations and in impoverished parts of our city, which is Pittsburgh is in many parts of it, an urban food desert.
Absolutely.
And then where we live, it's in many ways a rural food desert. Mm-hmm. And you're educating local kids to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Right. Before we go, I'd love to.
Yeah. So there's a couple of them. I've done a couple different groups of them. And one of the groups, they've been, I feel like they were like 10 or 11. They're almost graduating high school now. So yeah, they've never been on a farm. And for them, it's like, it's unbelievable. They told me they're like, it's so quiet out here. And they're like, we can hear birds. Like that was the thing they say. It's like, it's so green and we hear birds. And they've never seen animals. Now these kids, so they come and they help me when it's time to load the chickens to go to processing. And you should see them. I mean, we got the system down, and it's a great time for me to mentor them. You know, the dad's not around and raised by their grandma and single mom that's both entrepreneurs trying to make in it. And these kids, like, you know, it's a great time to mentor them and challenge them to, you know, be an amazing human being someday. So yeah, there's that. And then we work with a nonprofit out in Pittsburgh that takes kids that have been from the ages of like 15 to 19 that have been through the justice system, and they're, you know, get their second chance, and they're working on the chef side of things. So they're like in the restaurant industry. So they work them through every station through there. Mm-hmm. And so they got to come out first time of them being on a farm. We do homeschool groups, but yeah, I love the educating aspect of things and showing people how food can be grown, how it should be grown.
Yeah. Let's make some changes.
Yeah.
I think this conversation is going to really inspire people to be more mindful about where their food's coming from and, you know, look at the sources of the food. So I love it. Love you, brother.
Thanks for having me on, man.
See ya.
It was so much fun.
Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.